Welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Finding innovative ways to get more out of biofuels operations. I'm John Davis reporting. Any manufacturer is looking to get more out of their operations, and it's certainly no different for biofuel makers. At the recent American Coalition for Ethanol Conference, ACE for short, four ethanol producers who are innovating plants through the new processes and product technology talked about their approaches. ACE President Ron Alverson of Dakota Ethanol told the audience about the importance of carbon, in particular, the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard, or LCFS, and how it impacts ethanol production.
I think it's really important that we get to continue to work with Argonne Labs and the EPA to get the life cycle, the greenhouse gases accounting done correctly. And for a number of reasons, economic for low carbon fuel standards. We can, if you have an ethanol plant that's better than somebody else down the road, you can get more carbon credits if you sell into the California market. The politics of greenhouse gases now, are growing. You see more talk about reduce carbon intensity. So those greenhouse gas emission markets are likely to grow in that regard too. And I think new data and new science, most of these life cycles analysis was done probably 5 or 6 years ago at least now. And lots of things have happened to prove that lots of biofuels have reduced greenhouse gases emissions just based on new production practices, more energy efficient stuff done at the ethanol plants, better efficiency of conversions at the ethanol plants.
His company chose a new pathway for success.
Less natural gas and electrical consumption. We're making some nice changes in how much electricity and natural gas we're going to consume, more efficient stuff. Reduce N2O emissions from N and fertilizer, kind of based on lower rainfall. Got good data that says that. And maybe using some nitrification inhibitors or enhanced fertilizer efficiency products that reduce the nitrous oxide emissions. Little or no lime application in South Dakota. I would suspect that's also true for Minnesota and probably western Iowa. That'll knock a nice reduction off. And a soil carbon sequestration credit for high-yield corn production and reduced tillage. And once again, ILUC may be reduced by CARB. So this is what the new one will look like. And if you remember, it was 98 before. This one is 98. That's almost a 50% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions based on new science, better production practices, more efficient energy processes at the plant.
For Ray Baker, general manager of Adkins Energy in Northwest Illinois, their approach was to co-locate a new biodiesel plant with their 50 million gallon ethanol plant and use corn oil as a feedstock.
We look at the lower cost of operations, lower capital costs. We look at some of those integration advantages and then some of the other advantages. Some of the prime advantage that's out there is the utilization of the ethanol staff. Our existing operations crew, lab and maintenance staff, our sales and procurement in-house, administrative, environmental, and compliance in-house. We are going to add about 3 new jobs. We're going to have a biodiesel production manager and 2 new operations specialists that we'll have. But really on our shifts, we're going to have other people come and be able to run the biodiesel plant itself. Next is lower capital costs. Really you're going to be able to lower your cost compared to somebody who's putting in a standalone biodiesel plant. Less equipment tanks are necessary. The infrastructure for utilities is already on site, and it's going to create that immediate advantage over that plant, that other plant that's out there standalone. Some of the integration advantages, wastewater, methanol, glycerin, and some of the gums will be sent back into operations for ethanol. We're going to use the ethanol plant to recycle the water. We're going to recapture any of that unused alcohol that's in methanol, or in some products you can actually use the ethanol. And we're going to sell that out in the ethanol stream. And then we're going to be able to increase the DDG volume from the glycerin recapture through the plant, and we'll be able to sell that back out in feed value. We think rather soon we're going to be able to separate that glycerin, get a higher value glycerin out of the enzymatic process, but for right now we're putting that back through the plant. Other advantages, obviously, we're eliminating freight costs, middleman on distillers, corn oil sales, and when you're talking about insuring your assets for a biodiesel plant, you're now lumping the cost for your biodiesel plant into your insurable assets for your ethanol plant, and that's going to create significant decrease in premium.
Mike Earhart, CEO of Prairie Horizon Agri-Energy in Kansas, said they felt they needed to change even how they referred to themselves.
Years ago, we had the goal that we wanted to become a biorefinery and no longer be associated with just an ethanol plant. Guys, there's just something about when I go up to somebody, especially in Washington, and I say, I'm Mike Earhart, I have an ethanol plant. I'm Mike Earhart, and I'm the CEO and general manager of a biorefinery. Oh, you're oil and gas. Get it? I'm serious. It gets me in the door in places you don't get.
And he said they got away from the biodiesel model to make sure they produced a fuel that could drop right into any tank without blending.
We chose to go with renewable diesel because I didn't like the biodiesel concept, because I wanted to do something greater and better with my distiller's corn oil than going into a biodiesel. And I'm not being controversial, because it fits your plan, okay? But I'm in the middle of nowhere, and I just didn't think I'd get the yellow grease, and I just didn't think I'd get the other things that I needed to get into a biodiesel. And the thing I liked about renewable is I'm a drop-in fuel. I don't need anyone else to blend anything. I'm a drop-in fuel. I produce it. When I'm done with it, it comes out of the tank. You can put it in your vehicle and drive off with it. No one's going to tell me that I'm going to hold you hostage to blend that material.
Finally, Delane Johnson with Quad County Corn Processors, a company that recently produced the very first gallons of cellulosic ethanol, explained how they put in some efficiencies in the production process.
What we're doing is adding an inline stream that's going to process the existing kernel of corn further and getting more value out of that kernel of corn that we're already purchasing and processing. So with that, what we're actually doing is adding a process where the whole stillage comes off of the bottom of the distillation. It runs through a pretreatment system where we actually take it up to a little higher temperature again, relatively mild, and at the same time allows that fiber to be broke open. At that point, we're able to put in another enzyme, which is going to help the cellulose convert during the fermentation process. So the second fermentation process allows us to turn that into alcohol. Once that is done, there is a separate distillation column so that it does not limit the capacity of the standard cornstarch ethanol facility. We're able to commingle that product at 190 and be able to separate that for RIN purposes by way of a formula or paper, which I'll talk about in a bit as well. So it really is relatively simple. It's an inline process that you add onto your existing control system. And in our case, we added one person per shift because there are some additional lab tests that need to be done. But it is not a significant alteration to your existing plant today.
He says they're getting a bigger output, increasing the value of the feed produced, and they're opening the door for the industry as a whole to generate some pretty valuable renewable identification numbers, or RINs, that should be a boon for ethanol producers.
It does actually give us D3 RINs, and we've all been hearing for years that there's no commercial D3 RINs available. We are currently accumulating the gallons to keep them in our ownership, and at the point they are allowing the D3 RINs to be approved, we will give them our third-party engineering report, which we've already done and given to them, and they've reviewed in the background. But officially, we still have to go through the process. We have to go into the EMTS system and actually put that pathway as one of our pathways on that particular day, and then we're going to be able to generate a batch of D3 RINs for the production that we have been producing since July 1st.
Johnson said if other ethanol plants are able to adopt his company's same process, a potential 2 billion, with a B, gallons of cellulosic ethanol could be produced each year in this country without adding any more corn into the system. Alverson says the science is on ethanol producers' side, and the future looks bright with innovations such as these.
Expanding low-carbon fuel markets offer opportunities for ethanol and biodiesel producers and corn producers. Incentives can be very large, 5 to 15 cents per gallon ethanol and 25 to 50 cents for corn oil. The trend is our friend. Science says that biofuels are getting better and petroleum gasoline is getting worse.
I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.